case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Justice isn't just a word, it's your right. We'll stand up for you when others can't. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Merengatang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All throws with monkey sounds in there and called go.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
What's up, sports fans? No Danny, no Dusty. They're out on special assignment today. We got a best of edition of Danny and Dusty here on 1080 The Fan, 99 HD2, the Odyssey app. We are on YouTube today, so you can catch us everywhere. Hope you're all enjoying your post-July 4th celebrations. I'm a bit full. Had a lot of food. Had a lot of beer yesterday. So hope you all are at least a little bit better positioned physically than I and enjoying yourselves like Danny and Dusty are. We have got a bevy of great segments that producer Jeff Russ has put together for us. So let's start off with at least, I think what's been the most of, or at the top of most Blazers fans' minds is the NBA draft. Of course, they grabbed Donovan Clingan, number 7 overall, made a big trade for Washington Wizards forward Denny Avdija as well, getting Malcolm Brogdon off the books, getting a couple of draft picks included in that trade. So let's see, it's mostly just Danny and Rusty. Dusty was off on this day, but Danny and Rusty reacting to what the Denny Avdija trade is going to bring to the future of the Portland Trail Blazers.
With the 7th pick in the 2024 NBA draft, the Portland Trail Blazers select Donovan Clingan from the University of Connecticut. Just like
the fajita, I write what I live. The non-spoiler edition, as Adam Silver stepped to the podium to announce Donovan Clingan was the newest Portland Trail Blazer after a kind of a wild 15-minute period leading up to the 7th pick. But even before that, about an hour before the draft, ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski reported that the Portland Trail Blazers and the Washington Wizards had agreed on a deal in principle that would send Malcolm Brogdon the 2024 number 14 overall pick, a 2029 first-round pick, the second most viable or valuable in that draft, or in that draft that the Trailblazers currently own, which is one of three.
Yes.
And then 2 second-round picks for Wizards wing Denny Avdija, a 23-year-old player who finished last season averaging 15-7-4, shooting 50-37-74, while having arguably the best non-rookie scale value contract in the entire NBA. So let's walk through why that's important and what they did and how that all works out. And first of all, let me just say this. I've had a few people like, I thought you said you really liked Cody Williams in the draft and they took Donovan Clingan. Why aren't you bothered? Because they essentially said, we have Cody Williams at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did here. Before the draft, they addressed the wing need that I wanted them to go address. And it wasn't a, well, let's see if Cody Williams can be good. Denny Avdija is legitimately good right now, Jeff. That's the thing. He's not good in principle. He's gotten better every single year.
Yes.
And it's the thing is, like, just because I think a lot of people aren't familiar with him, because he played on a very, like, everybody wants to talk about how bad the Blazers are.
Yeah.
No. There's levels of suck there's rungs of hell. The Blazers aren't in the 14th rung of hell. The Wizards are in the 14th rung of hell. Like, that's what true hell looks like. And it's very, everybody's like, oh, his stats are empty. I'm like, do you know how hard it is to be effective on a team that bad and that dysfunctional?
Yeah. Especially once Jordan Poole came in.
Sweet sassafras. Like, what? I don't understand it. Please make my brain stop hurting. But as it pertains to Denny Avdija, Denny Avdija is 6'9". Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Blazers like players that are 6 foot nine?
Yes.
Do they need more of those?
Yes.
Okay. So if the Blazers traded a package to go get a player that is under 25, which check the box, is plus size, checks the box,
mm-hmm.
plus athlete, checks the box, plus defender, checks the box, can shoot, checks the box. Oh, also, he has playmaking. The thing that I have said over and over and over again, shooting can be taught. It's probably the easiest thing to teach when you're talking about skill development. The thing that is almost not teachable at all, that is intrinsic, that is you either have it or you don't, is feel and playmaking.
Mm-hmm.
And playmaking with size is the rarest commodity in the NBA to me. Last season, you take a look at how effective he was for forwards. Tell me if this is a good number, Jeff. Among all forwards in the NBA last year, according to Cleaning Glass, he was in the 89th percentile.
That tends to be pretty good.
In assist rate.
Mm-hmm.
89th percentile.
Yes.
So you're getting a guy that fits exactly what you want on your timeline.
Mm-hmm.
His contract is an absolute home run. For those that don't know, his contract is declining in value.
Yes.
So this year is it's at its highest value. It goes down as the cap goes up.
Right. So now he's got 4 years left, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is this year the first year on that
first
deal?
First year of that deal. Okay. So he is under control for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be 27 yeah. going into
and with the cap going up, it's going to be, that's a very friendly number.
It allows them to do a lot.
Yes.
Think about this. In his fourth year of his deal, he's going to make $11.5 million or 300% less than Jeremy Grant.
Yeah. I mean, what do we figure the mid-level will probably be more than that by then?
Oh, it already is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine mid-level at that point in time is around $15.5, $16 million.
So that's a, what as Eddie Murphy would have said, what a bargain.
Just, it's his contract is insane. And it's like, it's not just about his contract. It's about his contract and his production.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. So you take a look at as far as where he rates as a creator with his size, plus creator. His points per shot attempt, after struggling with his three ball the first couple years in the league, he started knocking down threes. And all of a sudden, his points per shot attempt got him up to the 72nd percentile. You take a look at, and everybody wants to kill Jeremy Grant for rebounding. Rightfully so. He's not a great rebounder.
Yeah.
Among all forwards, here is where Denny Avdia has rated in defensive rebounding percentage. 94th, 90th, 97th, and 93rd percentile among defensive rebounding forwards.
Not too shabby.
That is a plus rebounding forward.
Yes.
So, is he a great, you know, offensive rebounding forward? Not really. He's about average. 57th, 48th, and 60th. So it's again, you kind of average that out. He's slightly above average at mm-hmm. minimum. He's not a real high stocks guy, blocks uh-huh. and steals, but he's a good positional defender and disruptor. The big thing for about him is his shooting. The change this past year was he became a god from the corners after shooting roughly 33-ish percent through his career from the corners. He shot 48% from three this year.
Not too shabby.
Which elevated his three-point percentage a truckload.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and what's nice to see is that through his 4 years, as his usage increased, he just got better.
Yeah, he's gotten better every year.
And like, but in terms of like shooting percentage and everything.
Yeah, no, across the board. Like, yeah. That's what you, that's called what, Jeff?
Improvement.
Development.
Yes.
Yep. It's not always linear, but here's the crazy thing, guys. Young players get better.
Yeah. Crazy.
And I've seen people say,
as long as they have the right guys developing.
Well, good, but know. I mean, even with the Wizards, like.
That's a topic for perhaps later today.
But I'm saying, even with the Wizards, like you're talking about like development stuff, like if players will find it. Now, can you help accelerate it with the right guys? Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. But I firmly believe that guys will find it if they have it.
Yeah.
Avdija is a guy that I've liked for a long time. Really liked him when he came out in the draft. I think I had him. I was going through my old tweets. I think I had him second in my rookie of the year poll going into that season. I was like, I really, 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 really liked him. Again, I have a type, 6'8" to 6'10", toolsy wings. Like,
yeah,
that's my jam.
With length.
Yeah, that's my jam. Like, you know, go down the list. Jonathan Isaac, Jabari Smith Jr., you know, Jeremy Grant, the Denny Avdia, I think it's, already said Jonathan Isaac, Scotty Barnes. Like, those are, I like those kinds of players. Mm-hmm. Toolsy wings. This is the thing about this that makes a ton of sense to the Trailblazers. I've seen people say, well, I wanted somebody with more upside. He's younger than Dalton Knecht.
Yeah.
He's not ancient. He's still got development left. He went 14-7 and basically 4 this past year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is not to say that this is the case, but I just was like, I wonder what kind of players have averaged 14-7-4 with his shooting splits over the last 15 years. It's all Hall of Famers. It's Kevin Durant. It's LeBron James. It's Al Horford. It's like, basically, I was looking 14-7-4. I'm sorry, it's an over 6'7".
Uh-huh.
Because finding those kind of talents with size, that's the important thing, right? Like, that's, you look at the Boston Celtics. Like, that's what they have. They have skilled players with size.
Yes.
And I think that that's the thing that, that matters so, so much in how you go about this stuff. So that gets the, we're getting trades. Do. Well, we'll pocket that and we'll ask Eichen about that when he comes on. Actually, you know what? We'll dive into this right now, and then we'll talk about Don.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes.
On. Yeah. A trade has been announced right now. Adrian Wojnarowski and Shams Charania 4 seconds apart, 3 seconds apart. the Sacramento Kings are trading Davion Mitchell and Sasha Vezenkov to the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are in turn sending Jalen McDaniels to the Kings in the deal. Davion Mitchell, one of the best nicknames in all of sports, off night. Because if Davion Mitchell's guarding you, you're about to have an off night.
Yeah.
Sasha Vezenkov is the guy that they just got to come over from overseas. An older player, but an absolute hooper. Mm-hmm. I really love him. I like Jalen McDaniels a little bit. I think this is a money situation where they don't want to pay Davion Mitchell, and I think Jalen McDaniels might have. Let me take a look at his contract. I think Jalen McDaniels has a little bit more on his deal. This time of year, all contracts blend together because I swear to God, I've been staring at a cap sheet for the past 7 hours. No, this is his last year. Okay, so he has one more year left. Jalen McDaniels, obviously the brother of Jaden McDaniels. So many of the McDanieli out there.
Yeah.
It was rumored that the Kings have been looking to make some deals. That is for sure. They retained Malik Monk, and they tried to move out of 13. They ended up taking Devin Carter last night, who I think is a great player. But by taking Devin Carter, they basically said, all right, there's our third guard. See you, Davion. That's essentially what's happened here.
Uh-huh.
So for everybody's like, oh my God, the Blazers took another center. They're going to get no value. And it's like, guys, it's okay. Let's just chill. It does sound like that Time Lord Robert Williams could be on the move.
Right. Well, back to the previous point, the whole point of trades a lot of the time is mm-hmm. because you have a logjam at a certain position.
That's why trades happen.
Right, exactly. So why is it all of a sudden now it's like, oh, you're not going to get the value for it because people know that you need to move them.
It's like, yeah.
This is what happens in trades.
Yes.
Like, all the time.
I've made a decision. I'm going to go with this path. Yeah, that's the normal thing.
It's not often that you ship out a position where you still need somebody, you know, where you ship out a position of need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You trade somebody because you've got stuff there.
Or if you're in the case of the Wizards, you're like, all right, we're starting from scratch.
Yeah.
I still don't, like, I understand that they're trying to kind of clear the deck for Alex Sarr and Bilal Coulibaly to play like 3-4-5. But giving up on Avdija, it definitely made a lot of teams go like, wait, Danny Avdija was available?
Right.
It's a little bit weird.
All right, nice way to open the show there. Definitely a great acquisition, in Danny's opinion and Rusty's opinion, and as well as Dusty, and my opinion as well. Really, something that the Blazers needed, a nice 6'9 stretch for, and he can actually shoot, and he's not a guard. All right, let's get into some more Blazers talk coming up next. We have got Sean Eichen from the Rose Garden Report. He's in for a couple of segments with Danny and Dusty talking more Blazers and breaking down what their future could be and what they did in the NBA draft. That's next on a Best of Edition of Danny and Dusty here on 1080 The Fan.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Best of edition of Danny and Dusty. They are on special assignment here on the day after July 4th. Schultzy sitting in with you, hitting the button on all the segments. Let's get into some more Blazer talk. Sean Hyken from the Rose Garden Report joining the guys, talking about all of the moves that the Blazers did in the draft. Of course, they made a lot more on day one of the NBA draft and moving on to day two, just kind of shedding some stuff, getting a little bit of money back and setting themselves up for the future. But let's hear what Sean Hyken had to tell Danny and Dusty all about that from the day one and day two action of the NBA draft and what the future holds for the Portland Trail Blazers.
We're now joined by Sean Hyken of the Rose Garden Report. Sean, thanks for taking some time. What did you, now almost 24 hours removed, 18 hours, whatever, that math doesn't work in my brain right now.
The next day
removed from the NBA draft in a trade for Washington Wizards wing Danny Avdia. What is your kind of high-level takeaway and then kind of work your way in?
From the overall night, are you saying? My kind of overall takeaway from the night is that the Blazers came into the draft with two lottery picks, and they came out of it with two good basketball players, and this team needs good basketball players right now. And so I think from all that, you have to look at it as a pretty successful night, I would say.
With that in mind, there's been some thoughts that the Blazers may have overspent in getting Danny Avdia. Where do you kind of fall on the acquisition of Avdia, his fit, him as a player, and then the actual cost that it ended up requiring to get the deal done?
Well, the cost is, to me, I don't think the cost is anything crazy. Cause look, you look at each of the individual pieces. They had to trade Malcolm Brogdon this summer anyway. Like, there's no way that over the next 2 weeks, Malcolm Brogdon was going to come out of it still a member of the Portland Trailblazers. So they had to get that part of it done. They gave up the 14th pick in a draft that everybody agrees is not that good. And the player that they got back in Danny Avdia is a better player than anybody they reasonably could have drafted at the 14th pick. And then they gave up a couple of second rounders, which you can get second rounders anytime. And the second most favorable out of their three first round picks that they have in the 2029 draft, which is 5 years from now. I think people see the number of picks on the page and don't look at what the picks actually are and think they gave up a ton for a guy. But Danny Avdia is a 6'9" two-way wing who's 23 years old and on a really team-friendly contract. So I think that's it. You know, when they've been looking to trade their veterans over the last year, whether it's Malcolm Brogdon or Jeremy Grant, Matisse Thybulle, whoever, they've been more from what I've heard over the course of that time, they had been more in the business of trying to get players that fit what they're trying to do with Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe and the other young guys that they're building around, as opposed to just trying to stack up a number of draft picks. And I think for a guy that they were going to have to trade anyway with Malcolm Brogdon, I think this deal certainly accomplishes a lot of those goals.
On that particular line, the players over picks, it's a different path than a lot of other front offices have gone down. What do you think the risk reward kind of situation is as it pertains to that? Because it is different, obviously, than what Sam Presti has done in OKC and a couple of other teams have tried to do. But it also seems more reminiscent to, not necessarily directly what Danny Ainge did in Boston by moving players or swapping things around to get the players that he wanted with specific picks in the draft. So it's not quite exactly a straight line, but where do you kind of see in how that operation makes sense or doesn't?
Well, if you have, for right now, I mean, the Blazers are still kind of in the early stage of the rebuild. They don't have, like, the guy who's the centerpiece of what they're trying to build, but they have a few guys, and Joe Cronin identified two of them last night in his post-draft press conference, and Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe, that they have two guys that they see as, like, as of right now, the core pieces of what they're trying to build. And if you have a couple guys that you identify as those guys, you need to find players that you feel fit well around those guys. And I mean, if you feel that Denny Avdija fits well around those guys, and you know, those guys are going to develop into the guys that you hope they're going to be better if they have good players around them that complement what they're trying to do, as opposed to, you know, if you're a team like, let's say, you know, Washington, or, you know, Washington, it seems like right now is trying to take the, you know, Oklahoma City a couple of years ago approach, or like what Brooklyn, it seems like, is now trying to do with, you know, after they traded Mikal Bridges for a million draft picks and got their own picks back and all of that. Like, if, you know, there's the approach of, like, we're just going to, like, not even put NBA players out on the floor and try to just be as bad as possible and just get picks in that way. Like, that's a thing you can do. And then what the Blazers are trying to do is be, like, because the thing is they're going to be bad this year. Their record is going to be similar to what their record was last year. They're not in danger of winning too many games because they traded for Denny Avdija. They had good NBA veterans on their team last year, and they still lost 61 games. But I think they're hoping to be able to develop these guys, these like Scoot Henderson, Shaedon Sharpe, I guess now Donovan Klingon, who they took with the 7th pick last night, while also still in the short term losing enough games to get the picks that they need to get who, you know, whether it's Cooper Flagg or whoever it is in the next couple of drafts. And I mean, it's two different approaches. I think the thing we've learned is that there's no one right or wrong way to do it. And if these guys trust their talent evaluation, they've identified Denny Avdija as somebody that's undervalued and can grow with Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe, like that, then yeah, go for it.
There's always a Mike Schmidt's tweet available to find out which one they value most. Speaking of the NBA draft and Donovan Klingon, what did you make of the Trailblazers were linked to upside swings and opportunity, and a lot of that was around the wings, and trading for Denny Avdija, at least in my opinion, solved that problem for them. That was instead of taking Cody Williams or had Tijon Salon been on the board at 7, they opted instead to go with Denny Avdija, which presented an opportunity at number 7 to take Donovan Klingon after multiple stops along the way through the first 6 about potential trade ups and opportunities there. Where do you kind of see Donovan Klingon fitting into all of this? The Blazers making a change in style at the center position, and whether or not he can be effective as that guy kind of going forward. Where you the level of success for a drop big in the NBA has to be incredibly high if you're going to be a starting caliber big.
It is definitely a change in style. He doesn't have the, you know, mid-range shooting ability that DeAndre Ayton has, or the perimeter shooting ability that Duop Reath has. He's definitely more, like, offensively, he's definitely more of an old school type of center. But from a standpoint of, like I was saying earlier, needing good basketball players and, you know, needing guys where you know what they're good at. You know, the thing that Donovan Klingon was great at UConn was rim protection. The Blazers were the second worst rim defending team in the league last year behind Washington. And so that's a pretty clear hole that they had that he filled. And he's also the type of player where, like, the things that he was good at in college, which were setting screens, rebounding, protecting the rim, it's pretty easy to project that those things he's still going to be good at in the NBA.
And those opportunities are going to be there. The fit with him and DeAndre Ayton, as it stands right now, has some people anxious or frustrated or wondering how that's going to shake out, or if it devalues DeAndre Ayton. Right before you came on, we just had a trade where Davion Mitchell, obviously it's a lesser extent, was traded away to Toronto. And it's which is kind of exactly how things happen. A young player comes in and Devin Carter that ends up kind of pushing him out. And then you make a trade. That's kind of how the NBA works. Do you see that as simply the same situation here with Donovan Klingon, DeAndre Ayton, Robert Williams, that this is just, it's kind of a next up mentality, and when you don't decide to move on or move forward with a guy, that you move that guy out?
Potentially. I don't think there's really any huge rush to do that with DeAndre Ayton, because I don't think you and I talk about this all the time, you know, rookie, you know, we talked about it last year with Scoot, with, you know, how hard the learning curve is with rookie mm-hmm. point guards, and how much he struggled, even though he has the long-term talent that, you know, they're still very high on him. He was always going to kind of struggle his rookie year. And he did with Donovan Clingan, you know, unless you're literally like Victor Wembanyama, which is like a physical specimen that the world has never seen before, like, you're going to struggle as a rookie. I don't think Donovan Clingan is going to be good enough to start his rookie year. So it's, you know, I think it's totally fine to keep, like, I would expect that the Blazers starting center on opening night is going to be DeAndre Ayton. And that's going to be the case going forward, but he's got 2 years left on his deal. If they, you know, stick with him this year and then they decide to move him next summer when he's expiring, then you kind of hope that Donovan Clingan did enough his rookie season and at least showed that, you know, he's ready to at least kind of step into more of that role. I'm definitely expecting Clingan not to start this year. Robert Williams, I think if you can get any kind of positive value for just with his injury history, I think you kind of have to just make that move. But I'm not really, like, I know they love Robert Williams, and I've heard that his rehab is going well and he's expected to be good to go for training camp. Just because of his injury history, I feel like anything they get from him as far as actual on-floor contributions is kind of a bonus. So I'm really just looking at this as a Clingan Ayton thing, and I don't think Clingan is going to be definitively better than DeAndre Ayton next year, and so I don't think there's anything to really worry about like who's going to start, because I think that's still DeAndre Ayton's job at this point.
Hey, can we get you to hold over and hop on for the next segment? We'll talk about the second round and kind of what to expect over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, we are joined by Sean Hyken of the Rose Garden Report. We'll hit a break real quick, come back, join up with Sean Hyken. We will talk about the second round potential for the Blazers to make at least one pick, probably with a two-way deal, and then likely moving another, and then what kind of happens next as the Blazers shape their roster for the 2025 season here on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Of course, we're sticking with the Yacht Rock Friday theme on a best-of edition of Danny and Dusty here on 1080 The Fan. No Danny, no Dusty, taking the day off after a very, very hot July 4th, even hotter July 5th planned for today. Stay cool out there. Definitely staying cool is Sean Hyken of the Rose Garden Report on for another segment with Danny and Dusty, rounding out their conversation about what the Portland Trail Blazers did in the NBA draft and what their team's going to look like going forward.
Sean Hyken of the Rose Garden Report was generous enough to stay on here with another segment as we're getting ready for the NBA draft, round number two, day number two. Sean, the second round is here, and the Portland Trail Blazers have picks 34 and 40. What do you expect to kind of happen here, and what is different about this situation now, that with it not only being 2 days, but with the Blazers having two picks here and the value of those second-round picks in the new CBA?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see whether they use both of those picks or not. And I would think, just, you know, as of right now, they have all 15 of their roster spots filled. Now, obviously, they could, you know, trade away somebody. There's still a whole lot of off season left to go. But I think the most likely thing that would happen would be if somebody that they draft, whether they use one or both of those picks, is going to be somebody that they get to sign a two-way contract. And that's kind of, I guess kind of one of the advantages. I personally don't love the 2-day format, and I don't know if a lot of people in the league do either, but I guess one of the advantages of it is that after the first round, teams have time to kind of reset and talk to different players' agents and say, hey, you know, if we take this guy here, would he be open to signing a two-way contract as opposed to holding out for a full, you know, standard NBA contract like they've signed their last two second-round picks, Rayon Rupert and Jabari Walker, too. So they'll have a good enough idea of, you know, like they're on the clock at 34. If there are two guys they like, one of those guys' agent said, yeah, he'll sign a two-way. The other guy said, yeah, we don't want a two-way contract. Then, you know, that might be sort of a tiebreaker there. It's kind of how I would expect it to shake out.
Taking a look at kind of what's out there on the intel world, the Portland Trail Blazers obviously have all three of their two-way spots currently open. It's the nice thing about them is they're a year-to-year situation. So Ibo Baji, who's been there before, as much as the Blazers like him as a prospect, is not guaranteed that slot. But the Blazers can look at a variety of players, not only in the second round here, but also in the undrafted class. As you said, the roster spots are now all kind of locked up. Well, how do you think that this roster, how much do you think this roster is going to change between now and the next 3 weeks and kind of shape things up as we approach the free agency period and then heading into Summer League, which is now less than 3 weeks away?
Well, there's now, you know, the most pressing piece of business that I think they needed to get done with this summer was to trade Malcolm Brogdon, and they did that yesterday. But there's a few other guys that I think you will have to look at as them potentially being on the move. I think the three that really immediately come to mind are Matisse Thybulle, who I think is going to have a lot of interest from contenders because he's the type of player that's valuable on good teams for what he does defensively, and he's on a really manageable contract. So I think that's a guy that could be on the move. Jeremy Grant, who they have been resistant to trading in the past, but I think this summer it might make more sense from both sides, especially trading for, you know, trading for Denny Avdija, and then also wanting to have, you know, you look at the front court, they have their own young forwards, you know, Jabari Walker, Tumani Kamara, and Chris Murray. Like, there's now, you know, yeah, you throw Avdija in the mix. Like, it makes some sense to at least look around and see what the Jeremy Grant market is like. And then the other one is Anfernee Simons. And I know you and I kind of noticed the same thing last night in Joe Cronin's post-draft press conference when he said, He was asked about kind of what's next after the draft as far as building the roster, and he said that they're committed to Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe as the two guys they're building around. And I would just immediately, my antennas went up like, oh, that's interesting, who he mentioned and who he didn't. I don't know if that was intentional, but I definitely noticed it, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's actually where I wanted to end with this one, is the framing that you got from Joe Cronin last night in the press conference. What was your kind of general takeaway from the description of how, not just with as it pertains to Scoot and Shaedon, but the path that the team is now kind of heading down?
Well, I'll put it this way. I did not get the sense from, like, he still talked about last night. Like, I've seen some reports out there that they're trying to, like, fast track it and get it back into the playoffs. When you look at what he said last night, he used the words, we're a rebuilding team, a couple of different times. He also said, you know, we're not good enough, we need to be adding to our talent base. I don't think, you know, even though they, you know, a player like Denny Avdija, who they traded for, is a guy who, you know, would be helpful in a, you know, winning, you know, playoff contending type of situation, I don't get the sense that they have any kind of mandate to say, hey, we have to push for the playoffs or push for the play-in this year. I think they're still slow building it, and they're going to, you know, at the very least this next season, the record is probably still going to be pretty similar to what it was last year. But there's kind of the pieces are starting to make a little bit more sense now, like moving Brogdon out and clearing out a little bit of that logjam and replacing their, you know, veteran point guard when they already have a bunch of guards with a wing, which is a position that they didn't have a lot of. I think it's starting to make a little bit more sense now, and it'll be interesting to see what the rest of their offseason looks like as far as which other guys are moved out and who's brought in.
Sean Hyken of the Rose Garden Report, generous enough to join us here for a couple of segments ahead of the NBA draft, round number two. Sean, thanks, man. I'll let you go because I know you got to go cover round number two. It's going to start here in just under 7 minutes. Thanks for taking some time. We'll check back in with you again, all right?
I'll talk to you soon, man.
Always good to hear from Sean Hyken. He is one of the most connected guys on the Portland Trail Blazers and definitely dropping some knowledge. And he was pretty much correct about what the Blazers ended up doing on day two, which was just stashing stuff for later, grabbing some cash, grabbing some future picks. Let's move on, though. Coming up next on a best of edition of Danny and Dusty, Portland's own Ian Carmel. That's coming up on 1080 The Fan. Best of edition of Danny and Dusty here on 1080 The Fan. The guys on special assignment enjoying their day off after July 4th. A very hot one. Stay cool out there. Another guy staying cool, Portland's own Ian Carmel, very famous comedian, and just the perfect example of somebody that has had the most success, I think, out of, like, any famous person in Portland. It's always great to see him come into the studio and come onto the show with Danny and Dusty. We've got the next hour basically set up with him. We'll get into our first segment here. And he came in talking to them on a Wrestling Wednesday. And you know Ian Carmel loves to break down wrestling, especially with Danny and Dusty. It just got really fun. So let's dive right into that. On Wrestling Wednesday, we are bringing in Ian Carmel, comedian, hometown hero, Blazer fan. And yeah, you come into ravishing Rick Rude, too, so I think that's good.
It's perfect. It's perfect for me. You got a body like mine. There's no other intro music.
Now, have you guys gone through, have you drafted your top wrestlers on All Fantasy Everything?
We have not. That is one of those, there's a few topics we have that are like in this golden cage where we're just waiting for the right guest to come in and do it.
Yeah, that is one that will be must listen.
Yeah.
That will be a huge hit.
You get Dame on for that one, do the wrestlers?
I would love to get Dame on there. Yeah. I would love to get a former wrestler on there. Mm. I grew up a wrestling fan. Yeah. I was a big Razor Ramon guy.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Back in the
really?
Day. Say yeah. hello to the bad guy.
Yeah. You were a heel. You like the heel,
I
huh?
love that dude. I still remember him pulling up the padding next to the ring and doing the Razor's Edge.
Oh, yeah.
Like on the concrete to people. I love that dude. I remember Lex Luger.
Yeah, yeah. Not Luther.
Not Luther.
Yeah.
Completely different non-trademark infringing name, Lex Luger. pulling the body slam on Yokozuna, man. I loved it. And then I kind of, weirdly, I fell out right before the NWO stuff.
When it just absolutely exploded.
Exploded.
Yeah.
Like pre...
The Attitude Era.
Yeah. I was out before Stone Cold, but my older brother loved Stone Cold. I got into Star Wars around that era, so I went into a much sadder nerd zone.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I think everybody around our age, though, I think that there is...
There's some tangential thing.
Everybody had an addiction to wrestling at some point.
How could you not?
Yeah.
And I see it now, like, with my son, who's 7.
Yeah.
It's coming back.
He is now starting to get into it, just because inherently boys are dumb and we just want to throw our bodies into things. Mm-hmm. And you see grown men doing it and you're like, whoa.
I mean, South Park nailed it, where it is like it is a soap opera with a football game happening in the middle of it. You know, it's perfect. Dude, there's something beautifully American about wrestling. I'm about to go on some weird tangent now, but like even... In the way it's offensive, it's also kind of progressive in a way where I'm like, before there were drag queens, you know what I mean, all over Bravo, like in movies and stuff like that. I remember seeing Goldust for the first time.
Yeah. Dudes wearing makeup.
And like Goldust specifically, and just having that normalized for me and just being like, that's a kind of person that there is out there.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Like you think about now, it's like it's the ugly side of this is Vince McMahon having to step aside because of stuff. But, you know, he was pushing Tori Wilson, who's one of their more stunning wrestlers of all time.
Yeah.
Remember, that was the big shock is when she kissed another woman on TV.
Right.
Like,
which
she was not thrilled about doing, and she was kind of forced into because of her contract. Like, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, weirdly progressive, but doing things maybe the wrong way.
In an evil way. Progressive in
progressively
an evil way.
Evil.
But when you look at Vince McMahon, somebody who dyes their mustache like that, an evil man.
I was going to say,
that's an evil man thing to do.
Quite literally twisting his mustache as he's coming up with these plot lines.
Also, so much HGH.
So
much HGH.
More HGH than man at this point.
Yeah.
His body probably looks like cheap pork. You know what I mean? If you were to slice into him.
Which might be one of the greatest and saddest reasons why, as kids, we only had wrestling like once or twice when we were growing up here, because they mandated steroid testing in the WWF. WWF was like, we're not going. We're just not going to come anymore then.
Exclusively high flyers. Yeah. You know, it's like Rey Mysterio fights Rey Mysterio's training partner live at the Memorial Coliseum.
They just said, if we can't have that, we're not even going to come.
It actually was that, too, because as soon as the band came down for it, woof!
Oh,
Monday Night Raw, Memorial Coliseum. You're like,
wet muscles.
Yeah, you're like, oh, okay.
That's also when I started doing stand-up, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Was when
the steroid band came out.
I was like, finally.
And then you're like, I'm in. I can finally start performing now.
Yeah.
You do have a special coming up, which is a really cool thing for any comedian to have, but to do it in your hometown... I think that probably means a little bit more for you with what's coming up, March 23rd at Revolution Hall.
March 23rd, Revolution Hall. First show sold out, but we added a second show, and there's still tickets to the second show if you're trying to go. But, I was talking to the label, and we were looking at a bunch of cities. We were thinking about, like, Nashville or Madison or, like, New York or L.A., Austin, which are all, like, wonderful cities that I love performing.
Everybody seems to be going to Nashville to do these. Are the shows just, like, set up really well there?
I think there's, like, I mean, they're, like, from Tennessee and from Nashville, so they're, like, they're drinking and they're fun and they're crazy. You know what I mean?
Okay, so the crowd's always on.
I think you listed the drunkest cities in America. Yeah.
That's
Madison,
right. Yeah.
Nashville.
Yeah, Madison definitely in
Madison. I mean, I could just name every city in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Every time you look at that list, it's, like, Milwaukee, Madison, Eau Claire. Like, it's every single city in Wisconsin. But there are also people who go out. They go see live shows. So it's like the kind of place where even if you don't have a big draw there, they're like, we'll go see the comedy show.
Sure.
But for me, like once I started like looking at the material I was doing, I was like, oh, this is all you know, when I first started conceiving of the special, I was like trying, I was like, let me do a greatest hits, because I haven't put out an album or a special in like a decade. And then I started like putting it together and writing more, and I was like, oh, you know what? That's not what I care about right now. Let me just, like, I'm writing about getting older and like and what that feels like, starting to feel like more conservative as I get older. where like the kid, like, I don't know if I'm, that's happening to me, or if the kids are just going so far left so fast that I'm like,
yes,
I got, yeah, both are happening. I got yelled at a dinner party for saying the word unhoused, like yelled at, dressed, or saying the word homeless, like dressed down in front of all these people. She was like, it's unhoused, like, just like jumped on me.
And your eyebrow twitched.
My eyebrow twitched. I was like marching in protests, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like 5-10 years ago. I was like a full-blown communist, and now I'm getting like yelled at a dinner party. I'm like, you're eating feta and like, you know, arancini pasta too, all right? You're not Che Guevara. You're also here talking about shows that are only on HBO, yes. A more expensive version of cable. So don't get on me. But anyway, so like I started, I was like, this
also,
is
also, it's not conflict-free food that you're eating right now.
Right, exactly. Yeah. A lot of conflict.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Of course, we're sticking with the Yacht Rock Friday theme on a best of edition of Danny and Dusty here on 1080 The Fan. No Danny, no Dusty. Taking the day off after a very, very hot July 4th, even hotter July 5th planned for today. Stay cool out there. Definitely staying cool is Sean Hyken of the Rose Garden Report on for another segment with Danny and Dusty, rounding out their conversation about what the Portland Trail Blazers did in the NBA draft and what their team's going to look like going forward.
Sean Hyken of the Rose Garden Report was generous enough to stay on here with another segment as we're getting ready for the NBA draft, round number two, day number two. Sean, the second round is here, and the Portland Trail Blazers have picks 34 and 40. What do you expect to kind of happen here, and what is different about this situation now, that with it not only being 2 days, but with the Blazers having two picks here and the value of those second-round picks in the new CBA?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see whether, first of all, whether they use both of those picks or not. And I would think, just, you know, as of right now, they have all 15 of their roster spots filled. Now, obviously, they could, you know, trade away somebody. There's still a whole lot of the offseason left to go. But I think the most likely thing that would happen would be if somebody that they draft, whether they use one or both of those picks, is going to be somebody that they get to sign a two-way contract. And that's kind of, I guess kind of one of the advantages. I personally don't love the 2-day format, and I don't know if a lot of people in the league do either, but I guess one of the advantages of it is that after the first round, teams have time to kind of reset and talk to different players' agents and say, hey, you know, if we take this guy here, would he be open to signing a 2-way contract as opposed to holding out for a full, you know, standard NBA contract like they've signed their last two second round picks, Rayon Rupert and Jabari Walker too. So they'll have a good enough idea of, you know, like they're on the clock at 34. If there are two guys they like, one of those guys' agent said, yeah, he'll sign a 2-way. The other guy said, yeah, we don't want a 2-way contract. Then, you know, that might be sort of a tiebreaker there. It's kind of how I would expect it to shake out.
Taking a look at kind of what's out there on the intel world, the Portland Trailblazers obviously have all three of their two-way spots currently open. It's the nice thing about them is they're a year-to-year situation. So Iwobodje, who's been there before, as much as the Blazers like him as a prospect, is not guaranteed that slot. but the Blazers can look at a variety of players, not only in the second round here, but also in the undrafted class. As you said, the roster spots are now all kind of locked up. How do you think that this roster, how much do you think this roster is going to change between now and the next 3 weeks and kind of shape things up as we approach the free agency period and then heading into Summer League, which is now less than 3 weeks away?
Well, there's now, you know, the most pressing piece of business that I think they needed to get done with this summer was to trade Malcolm Brogdon, and they did that yesterday. But there's a few other guys that I think you will have to look at as them potentially being on the move. I think the three that really immediately come to mind are Matisse Thybulle, who I think is going to have a lot of interest from contenders because he's the type of player that's valuable on good teams for what he does defensively, and he's on a really manageable contract. So I think that's a guy that could be on the move. Jeremy Grant, who they have been resistant to trading in the past, but I think this summer it might make more sense from both sides, especially trading for, you know, trading for Denny Avdija, and then also wanting to have, you know, you look at the front court, they have their own young forwards, you know, Jabari Walker, Tumani Kamara, and Chris Murray. Like, there's not, you know, yeah, you throw Avdija in the mix. Like, it makes some sense to at least look around and see what the Jeremy Grant market is like. And then the other one is Anfernee Simons, and I know you and I kind of noticed the same thing last night in Joe Cronin's mm-hmm. post-draft press conference when he said, He was asked about kind of what's next after the draft as far as building the roster, and he said that they're committed to Scoot Henderson and Shaedon Sharpe as the two guys they're building around. And I would just immediately, my antennas went up, like, oh, that's interesting, who he mentioned and who he didn't. I don't know if that was intentional, but I definitely noticed it, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's actually where I wanted to end with this one, is the framing that you got from Joe Cronin last night in the press conference. What was your kind of general takeaway from the description of how, not just with as it pertains to Scoot and Shaedon, but the path that the team is now kind of heading down?
Well, I'll put it this way. I did not get the sense from, like, he still talked about last night. Like, I've seen some reports out there that they're trying to, like, fast track it and get it back into the playoffs. When you look at what he said last night, he used the words, we're a rebuilding team, a couple of different times. He also said, you know, we're not good enough, we need to be adding to our talent base. I don't think, you know, even though they, you know, a player like Denny Avdija, who they traded for, is a guy who, you know, would be helpful in a, you know, winning, you know, playoff contending type of situation, I don't get the sense that they have any kind of mandate to say, hey, we have to push for the playoffs or push for the play-in this year. I think they're still slow building it, and they're going to, you know, at the very least this next season, the record is probably still going to be pretty similar to what it was last year. But there's kind of the pieces are starting to make a little bit more sense now, like moving Brogdon out and clearing out a little bit of that logjam and replacing their, you know, veteran point guard when they already have a bunch of guards with a wing, which is a position that they didn't have a lot of. I think it's starting to make a little bit more sense now, and it'll be interesting to see what the rest of their offseason looks like as far as which other guys are moved out and who's brought in.
Sean Hyken of the Rose Garden Report, generous enough to join us here for a couple of segments ahead of the NBA draft, round number two. Sean, thanks, man. I'll let you go because I know you got to go cover round number two. It's going to start here in just under 7 minutes. Thanks for taking some time. We'll check back in with you again, all right?
I'll talk to you soon, man.
Always good to hear from Sean Hyken. He is one of the most connected guys on the Portland Trail Blazers and definitely dropping some knowledge. And he was pretty much correct about what the Blazers ended up doing on day two, which was just stashing stuff for later, grabbing some cash, grabbing some future picks. Let's move on, though. Coming up next on a best of edition of Danny and Dusty, Portland's own Ian Carmel. That's coming up on 1080 The Fan. Best of edition of Danny and Dusty here on 1080 The Fan. The guys on special assignment enjoying their day off after July 4th. A very hot one. Stay cool out there. Another guy staying cool, Portland's own Ian Carmel, very famous comedian, and just the perfect example of somebody that has had the most success, I think, out of, like, any famous person in Portland. It's always great to see him come into the studio and come onto the show with Danny and Dusty. We've got the next hour basically set up with him. We'll get into our first segment here. And he came in talking to them on a Wrestling Wednesday. And you know Ian Carmel loves to break down wrestling, especially with Danny and Dusty. It just got really fun. So let's dive right into that.
On Wrestling Wednesday, we are bringing in Ian Carmel, comedian, hometown hero, Blazer fan, And you come into Ravishing Rick Rude, too, so I think that's good.
It's perfect. It's perfect for me. When you got a body like mine, there's no other intro music.
Now, have you guys gone through, have you drafted your top wrestlers on All Fantasy Everything?
We have not. That is one of those, there's a few topics we have that are like in this golden cage where we're just waiting for the right guest to come in and do it.
Yeah, that is one that will be must listen.
Yeah.
That will be a huge hit.
You get Dame on for that one and do the
wrestler? I would love to get Dame on there. Yeah. I would love to get a former wrestler on there. It's just, I grew up a wrestling fan. Yeah. I was a big Razor Ramon guy.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Back in the day. Say hello to the bad guy.
You were a heel. You like the heel,
I love that dude. I still remember him pulling up the padding next to the ring and doing the Razor's Edge.
Oh, yeah.
Like on the concrete to people. I love that dude. I remember Lex Luger.
Yeah. Not Luther.
Not Luther.
Yeah.
Completely different, non-trademark infringing name, Lex Luger. pulling the body slam on Yokozuna, man. I loved it. And then I kind of, weirdly, I fell out right before the NWO stuff.
When it just absolutely exploded.
Exploded.
Yeah.
Like pre...
The
Attitude Era. Yeah. I was out before Stone Cold, but my older brother loved Stone Cold. I got into Star Wars around that era, so I went into a much sadder nerd zone.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I think everybody around our age, though, I think that there is...
There's some tangential thing.
Everybody had an addiction to wrestling at some point.
How could you not?
Yeah.
And I see it now, like, with my son, who's 7.
Yeah.
It's coming back.
He is now starting to get into it, just because inherently boys are dumb and we just want to throw our bodies into things. Mm-hmm. And you see grown men doing it, and you're like, whoa.
I mean, South Park nailed it, where it is like it is a soap opera with a football game happening in the middle of it. You know, it's perfect. Dude, there's something beautifully American about wrestling. I'm about to go on some weird tangent now, but like even in the way it's offensive, it's also kind of progressive in a way where I'm like, before they were drag queens, you know what I mean, all over Bravo, like in movies and stuff like that. I remember seeing Goldust for the first time.
Dudes wearing makeup.
And like Goldust specifically, and just having that normalized for me and just being like, that's a kind of person that there is out there.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Like you think about now, it's like it's the ugly side of this is Vince McMahon having to step aside because of stuff. But, you know, he was pushing Torrey Wilson, who's one of their more stunning wrestlers of all time.
Yeah.
Remember, that was the big shock, is when she kissed another woman on TV.
Right.
Like,
which
she was not thrilled about doing, and she was kind of forced into because of her contract. Like, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, weirdly progressive, but doing things maybe the wrong way.
In an evil way. Progressive.
Progressively evil.
But when you look at Vince McMahon, somebody who dyes their mustache like that, that's an evil man.
I was going to say,
that's an evil man thing to do.
Quite literally twisting his mustache as he's coming up with these plot lines.
Also, so much HGH.
So
much HGH.
More HGH than man at this point.
Yeah.
His body probably looks like cheap pork. You know what I mean? If you were to slice into him.
Which might be one of the greatest and saddest reasons why, as kids, we only had wrestling like once or twice when we were growing up here, because they mandated steroid testing in the WWF. WWF was like, we're not going. We're just not going to come anymore
Exclusively high flyers. Yeah. You know, it's like Rey Mysterio fights Rey Mysterio's training partner live at the Memorial Coliseum.
They just said, if we can't have that, we're not even going to come.
It actually was that, too, because as soon as the band came down for it, Monday Night Raw, Memorial Coliseum.
Just
you're like,
wet muscles.
Yeah, you're like, oh, okay.
That's also when I started doing stand-up, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Was when
the steroid band came down.
I was like, finally.
And then you're like, I'm in. I can finally start performing now.
Yeah.
You do have a special coming up, which is a really cool thing for any comedian to have, but to do it in your hometown, I think that probably means a little bit more for you with what's coming up, March 23rd at Revolution Hall.
March 23rd, Revolution Hall. First show sold out, but we added a second show, and there's still tickets to the second show if you're trying to go. But, I was talking to the label, and we were looking at a bunch of cities. We were thinking about, like, Nashville or Madison or, like, New York or L.A., Austin, which are all, like, wonderful cities that I love performing.
Everybody seems to be going to Nashville to do these. Are the shows just, like, set up really well there?
I think there's, like, I mean, they're like from Tennessee and from Nashville, so they're like they're drinking and they're fun and they're crazy. You know, what I mean?
Okay, so the crowd's always on.
I think you listed the drunkest cities in America. Yeah,
Madison,
that's right.
Yeah, Madison definitely. In
Madison. I mean, I could just name every city in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Every time you look at that list, it's like Milwaukee, Madison, Eau Claire. Like it's every single city in Wisconsin. But they're also people who go out. They go see live shows. So it's like the kind of place where even if you don't have a big draw there, they're like, we'll go see the comedy show.
Sure.
But for me, like once I started like looking at the material I was doing, I was like, oh, this is all, you know, when I first started conceiving of the special, I was like, let me do a greatest hits because I haven't put out an album or a special in like a decade. And then I started like putting it together and writing more. And I was like, oh, you know what? That's not what I care about right now. Let me just like, I'm writing about getting older and like, and what that feels like, starting to feel like more conservative as I get older, where like the kid, like, I don't know if that's happening to me or if the kids are just going so far left so fast that I'm like,
yes,
I got, yeah, both. Like, I got yelled at a dinner party for saying the word unhoused, like yelled at, dressed, or saying the word homeless, like dressed down in front of all these people. She was like, it's unhoused, like just like jumped on me.
And your eyebrow twitched.
My eyebrow twitched. I was like marching in protests, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like 5-10 years ago. I was like a full-blown communist, and now I'm getting like yelled at a dinner party. I'm like, you're eating feta and like, you know, arancini pasta too, all right? You're not Che Guevara. You're also here talking about shows that are only on HBO,
yes,
a more expensive version of cable. So don't get on me. But anyway, so like I was like,
also, it's not conflict-free food that you're eating right now.
Right, exactly. Yeah. A lot of conflict. Like, had to happen for you to get this. That almond milk that you're drinking costs like 165 gallons of water. So, like, lay off.
Let's chill for a minute.
Mine is one cow, pump full of hormones like a WWE wrestler.
Like a good true American.
Like a good, like, Lex Luger.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I care more about this stuff. I'm going to abandon the greatest hits. So I haven't done this hour in Portland. It's my favorite place on the planet to do stand-up comedy. I think, like, we have this reputation nationally for first of all, being a burnt-out husk full of Antifa super soldiers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pulling hand-crochet guns on people.
It would be kind of cool if we did have, like, Winter Soldier.
It would be amazing. Like, if there were, yeah, just marching around.
Like, you know, you have to play a little game, like, do I take that route today?
Yeah. Like, I don't want to run into you to the Brute Squad. Instead, people think, like, it's dangerous to be here. It's mostly dangerous to merge in traffic. That's, like, the worst thing that happens in Portland. But, This is like my people here aren't as uptight as people think. There's definitely a contingent of people who are like a little bit overly woke to the point that it's annoying. But for the most part, people are smart, down to earth, salt of the earth, like people with good senses of humor. This is the city that raised me. Beaverton is the city where I was unincorporated Washington County.
There we go.
Beaverton, Oregon.
So we had Gulliver in here, and he was getting triple teamed by three Beaverton High guys.
Yeah, Beaverton High guys.
Oh, okay.
I was just sitting over here being like, I'm technically from Hillsboro, where, you know, you guys just took a dump on us, like, in everything.
Westview is in Portland, but I grew up with a Beaverton address, so I come by it honestly.
Oh, so you're on the south side.
I'm on the south. I'm loyal to the soil.
There you go.
You know, Somerset Meadows, if we want to get real specific.
Oh, I know exactly where
it's at. Yeah. I'm in there.
My kids play Somerset West soccer.
That's right. Yeah, I bet they win, actually, pretty handily. If the kids are anything like the ones I grew up with.
Same uniforms as they had back then. The exact same ones.
Yeah, full of lead and rayon and all those things. But so, man, I was like, if I can do this in Portland, I want to do it in Portland. Revolution Hall is where I performed the last like 5 times I've been up here. I love that venue. So it was a no-brainer to me. And also, this is the only place where people will pay to come see me do stand-up comedy.
Mm.
Yeah.
I feel like that matters.
That's the other part of it. Yeah.
How much thinking outside of, like, I was thinking about this today. How much do you think about it outside of like the actual comedy? Like, you are a comedian, so you are like, you're trying to get your material right and be up there for an hour, record your best stuff for an hour. How much of the outside stuff do you have to think about?
As a preface to this, he's trying to induce anxiety.
Oh, okay.
No, that's not true. I just was, as I was talking this out, I was like, I don't want to turn him into a ball of anxiety over this.
Well, what do you mean exactly? Like people showing up or like what the stage looks like?
Would you like my list?
Yes, I do.
Here's my list.
Okay, please.
Do you think about like room temperature? Because if it's too hot, you'll start sweating. If it's too cold, you're nipping out.
This is why it's good that I'm doing it at Revolution Hall.
Yeah.
I've performed there so many times. times that I know, and I've been lucky enough to sell it out every time I've done it. I know what that room is like when it's completely full.
Yeah.
They always nail the temperature. My nipples are always on point. And if I am nipping out,
good.
I know I have like little covers I can put over.
Okay.
The makeup kit has, I have makeup, I have pasties, I have artificial nipples if I want to nip out and okay. I can't get it up. I've got everything. I'm prepared for every contingent.
Being in Portland, do you have to be conscious of your shoe game when you are doing a special?
Because that is something, the outfit is something that I'm still
working through.
Still working through.
Okay. Because outfit is a big one, because like if you watch Raw or Delirious, Eddie Murphy is in a leather suit.
And it breaks my heart that he did that already, because I want to wear a leather suit, but it's like somebody's gone and done it already.
But you can also pinpoint the exact like month and year that those were filmed based on the type of leather suit he is wearing. So do you want it to be something where it's like, oh, he definitely made that in 2020.
You could tell the exact moment he wore it by carbon dating the cocaine in, in the leather of his jumpsuit. The shoe game is something I keep in mind, but I'm turning 40 in October. You know what I mean? So it's like, I've got a garage full of sneakers that I feel like I can't wear anymore, because that are a little too flashy for like a 40-year-old white dude who looks like the dad from Bob's Burgers. Like, I have a limited range of what I can get away with, so...
You're speaking to a man wearing Crocs right now.
Right, well, okay, but those are like, Crocs are like fashionable now.
Yeah, tell my wife that.
All right, I will. Get her on the horn. We'll call her up. We'll have a Croc fashion worth of intervention. So I'm trying to find the right pair of New Balance. I'm trying to find the right pair of
the right pair of 550s.
Yeah, 550s that are flashy enough, but don't make me look like
we're not going monotone. We're going like earth tones.
We're doing some earth tones, some jewel tones, like a little pop of color, and then like pants that flatter, and then like a shirt that doesn't pull too much attention away from my beautiful face.
See, those are the things that I just wonder about, because comedians, you guys, like comedy is what you do.
Yeah.
But when you go through like a big special, it's so much more because everybody's watching.
Well, you even have to worry about like your outfit compared to what
the background is,
right? Like, so the curtain behind you, if you're wearing a color that looks bad with that, or even worse, blends in with it, then all of a sudden that's something you have to consider. So I'm on like calls right now with the label, with the producers, like...
So you have somebody else producing, you're not producing it.
Yeah. This company called 800 Pound Gorilla, who, like, they do, like, Kyle Kinane specials. Yeah. They do a lot of, like, great stand-up comedy specials. So I'm working with them. But you're on calls, like, okay, so they have three curtain options, so we need to know your outfit, and I don't know my outfit yet. So I'm here in Portland, sales tax-free, trying to figure out what that is.
That's right.
Yeah, right now.
Getting into the employee store. You're going to the Columbia employee store. You're just going to all of them and just getting the lay of the land.
In there,
right now,
trying to say like, hey, if you sponsor my outfit, upwards of 60 people will see me wearing this. You know what I mean? Please, like, get behind me. We can work on a sponsorship opportunity.
I love it. Well, that is March 23rd, where you have two shows now.
That's right. Yeah.
And that is the special that is a decade. It's been a decade since you put out an album.
A decade. I put out this one called 9.2 on Pitchfork that I did at Mississippi Studios for a decade ago. So this is my first one since then. Yeah. I've been in the lab writing late night for too long. I'm ready to get out there and do my own thing.
Now then you also have a book coming out.
I do.
And I want to talk to you about that. And Ian Carmel is going to stick in studio with us
for a
little bit longer. Actually, we're going to hold him hostage, and he has no choice.
Yeah, we barred the door.
No, the door. Yeah. I see that right now. There's armed guards outside.
There you go. Yeah. He's going to stick around, hang out with us, because he's our own. He's one of us.
Yeah.
And we do need to talk some Blazers with
you. We do need to talk some. Yes. I was at the game last night and at the Charlotte one, so I'm ready.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ian Carmel in studio. This is Danny and Dusty on The Fan.
Best of edition of Danny and Dusty here on 1080 The Fan. The guys on special assignment enjoying their day off after July 4th. A very hot one. Stay cool out there. Another guy staying cool, Portland's own Ian Carmel, very famous comedian, and just the perfect example of somebody that has had the most success, I think, out of like any famous person in Portland. It's always great to see him come into the studio and come onto the show with Danny and Dusty. We've got the next hour basically set up with him. We'll get into our first segment here. And he came in talking to them on a Wrestling Wednesday. And you know, Ian Carmel loves to break down wrestling, especially with Danny and Dusty. It just got really fun. So let's dive right into that. On Wrestling Wednesday, we are bringing in Ian Carmel, comedian, hometown hero, Blazer fan,
And yeah. You come into ravishing Rick Rude, too, so I think that's good.
It's perfect. It's perfect for me. And you got a body like mine. There's no other intro music.
Now, have you guys gone through, have you drafted your top wrestlers on All Fantasy Everything?
We have not. That is one of those. There's a few topics we have that are like in this golden cage where we're just waiting for the right guest to come in and do it.
Yeah, that is one that will be must listen.
Yeah.
That will be a is that huge hit.
You get Dame on for that one and do the wrestlers?
I would love to get Dame on there. Yeah. I would love to get a former wrestler on there. Mm. It's just, I grew up a wrestling fan. Yeah. I was a big Razor Ramon guy.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Back in the day. Say hello to the bad guy.
Yeah. You were a heel. You like the heel,
I love that dude. I still remember him pulling up the padding next to the ring and doing the Razor's Edge.
Oh, yeah.
Like on the concrete to people. I love that dude. I remember Lex Luger.
Yeah, yeah. Not Luther.
Not Luther. Yeah. Completely different, non-trademark infringing name, Lex Luger. pulling the body slam on Yokozuna, man. I loved it. And then I kind of, weirdly, I fell out right before the NWO stuff.
When it just absolutely exploded.
Exploded.
Yeah.
Like
Attitude Era.
The Attitude Era. Yeah. I was out before Stone Cold, but my older brother loved Stone Cold. I got into Star Wars around that era, so I went into a much sadder nerd zone.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I think everybody around our age, though, I think that there's
some tangential thing.
Everybody had an addiction to wrestling at some point.
How could you not?
Yeah.
And I see it now, like with my son who's 7.
Yeah.
It's coming back.
He is now starting to get into it just because inherently boys are dumb and we just want to throw our bodies into things and you see grown men doing it and you're like, whoa.
I mean, South Park nailed it where it is like it is a soap opera with a football game happening in the middle of it. You know, it's perfect. Dude, there's something beautifully American about wrestling. I'm about to go on some weird tangent now, but like even in the way it's offensive, it's also kind of progressive in a way where I'm like before there were drag queens, you know what I mean, all over Bravo, like in movies and stuff like that. I remember seeing Goldust for the first time.
Yeah. Dudes wearing makeup.
And like Goldust specifically, and just having that normalized for me and just being like, that's a kind of person that there is out there.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Like you think about now, it's like it's the ugly side of this is Vince McMahon having to step aside because of stuff. But, you know, he was pushing Torrey Wilson, who's one of their more stunning wrestlers of all time.
Yeah.
Remember, that was the big shock is when she kissed another woman on TV.
Right.
Like,
which
she was not thrilled about doing, and she was kind of forced into because of her contract. Like, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, weirdly progressive, but doing things maybe the wrong way.
In an evil way. Progressive in
progressively
an evil
way.
But when you look at Vince McMahon, somebody who dyes their mustache like that, an evil man.
I was going to say,
that's an evil man thing to do.
Quite literally twisting his mustache as he's coming up with these plot lines.
Also, so much HGH.
So
much HGH.
More HGH than man at this point.
Yeah.
His body probably looks like cheap pork. You know what I mean? If you were to slice into him.
Which might be one of the greatest and saddest reasons why, as kids, we only had wrestling like once or twice when we were growing up here. Because they mandated steroid testing in the WWF. WWF was like, we're not going. We're just not going to come anymore then.
Exclusively high flyers. Yeah. You know, it's like Rey Mysterio fights Rey Mysterio's training partner live at the Memorial Coliseum.
They just said, if we can't have that, we're not even going to come.
It actually was that, too, because as soon as the band came down for it, woof!
Oh, yeah.
Monday Night Raw, Memorial Coliseum. You're like,
wet muscles.
Yeah, you're like, oh, okay.
That's also when I started doing stand-up, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Was when
the steroid band came down.
I was like, finally.
And then you're like, I'm in. I can finally start performing now.
Yeah.
You do have a special coming up, which is a really cool thing for any comedian to have, but to do it in your hometown, I think that probably means a little bit more for you with what's coming up. March 23rd at Revolution Hall.
March 23rd, Revolution Hall. First show sold out, but we added a second show, and there's still tickets to the second show if you're trying to go. But yeah, I was talking to the label, and we were looking at a bunch of cities. We were thinking about like Nashville or Madison or like New York or L.A., Austin. Which are all like wonderful cities that I love performing.
Everybody seems to be going to Nashville to do these. Are the shows just like set up really well there?
I think there's like, I mean, they're like from Tennessee and from Nashville, so they're like they're drinking and they're fun and they're crazy. You know what I mean?
Okay, so the crowd's always on.
I think you listed the drunkest cities in America. Yeah,
that's
Madison,
right. Yeah, Madison definitely.
Madison. I mean, I could just name every city in Wisconsin. Yeah. Every time you look at that list, it's like Milwaukee, Madison, Eau Claire. Like it's every single city in Wisconsin. But they're also people who go out. They go see live shows. So it's like the kind of place where even if you don't have a big draw there, they're like, we'll go see the comedy show.
Sure.
But for me, like once I started like looking at the material I was doing, I was like, oh, this is all, you know, when I first started conceiving of the special, I was like, let me do a greatest hits because I haven't put out an album or a special in like a decade. And then I started like putting it together and writing more. And I was like, oh, you know what? That's not what I care about right now. Let me just like, I'm writing about getting older and like, and what that feels like, starting to feel like more conservative as I get older, where like the kid, like, I don't know if I'm, that's happening to me or if the kids are just going so far left so fast that I'm like,
yes,
I got, both are happening. I got yelled at a dinner party for saying the word unhoused, like yelled at dressed or saying the word homeless, like dressed down in front of all these people. She was like, it's unhoused. Like, just like jumped on me.
And your eyebrow twitched.
My eyebrow twitched. I was like marching in protests, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like 5-10 years ago. I was like a full-blown communist, and now I'm getting like yelled at a dinner party. I'm like, you're eating feta and like, you know, arancini pasta too, all right? You're not Che Guevara. You're also here talking about shows that are only on HBO, yes. A more expensive version of cable. So don't get on me. But anyway, so like I started, I was like, this
also,
is
also, it's not conflict-free food that you're eating right now.
Right, exactly. Yeah. A lot of conflict. Like, had to happen for you to get this. That almond milk that you're drinking costs like 165 gallons of water. So, like, lay off.
Let's chill for a minute.
Mine is one cow, pumped full of hormones like a WWE wrestler.
Like a good true American.
Like a good, like, Lex Luger.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I care more about this stuff. I'm going to abandon the greatest hits. So I haven't done this hour in Portland. It's my favorite place on the planet to do stand-up comedy. I think, like, we have this reputation nationally for first of all, being a burnt-out husk full of Antifa super soldiers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pulling hand-crochet guns on people.
It would be kind of cool if we did have, like, Winter Soldier.
It would be amazing if there weren't, just marching around.
Like, you know, you had to play a little game, like, do I take that route today?
Yeah. Like, I don't want to run into you to the Brute Squad. Instead, people think, like, it's dangerous to be here. It's mostly dangerous to merge in traffic. That's, like, the worst thing that happens in Portland. But, This is like my people here aren't as uptight as people think. There's definitely a contingent of people who are like a little bit overly woke to the point that it's annoying. But for the most part, people are smart, down to earth, salt of the earth, like people with good senses of humor. This is the city that raised me. Beaverton is the city where I was unincorporated Washington County.
There we go. You put
Beaverton, Oregon.
So we had Gulliver in here, and he was getting triple teamed by three Beaverton High guys.
Yeah, Beaverton High guys.
Oh, okay.
I was sitting over here being like, I'm technically from Hillsboro, where, you know, you guys just took a dump on us, like, in everything.
Westview is in Portland, but I grew up with a Beaverton address, so I come by it honestly.
Oh, so you're on the south side.
I'm on the south. I'm loyal to the soil.
There you go.
You know, Somerset Meadows, if we want to get real specific.
Oh, I know exactly where
that's
at.
Yeah. I'm in there.
My kids play Somerset West soccer.
That's right. Yeah, I bet they win, actually, pretty handily. If the kids are anything like the ones I grew up with.
Same uniforms as they had back then.
It was fantastic.
The exact same ones.
Yeah, full of lead and rayon and all those things. But so, man, I was like, if I can do this in Portland, I want to do it in Portland. Revolution Hall is where I performed the last like 5 times I've been up here. I love that venue. So it was a no-brainer to me. And also this is the only place where people will pay to come see me do stand-up comedy.
Mm.
Yeah.
I feel like that matters.
That's the other part of it. Yeah.
How much thinking outside of like, I was thinking about this today. How much do you think about it outside of like the actual comedy? Like, you are a comedian.
Yeah.
So you are like, you're trying to get your material right and be up there for an hour, record your best stuff for an hour. How much of the outside stuff do you have to think about?
As a preface to this, he's trying to induce anxiety.
Oh, okay.
No, that's not true. I just was, as I was talking this out, I was like, I don't want to turn him into a ball of anxiety over this.
Well, what do you mean exactly? Like people showing up or like what the stage looks like?
Would you like my list?
Yes, I do.
Here's my list.
Okay, please.
Do you think about like room temperature? Because if it's too hot, you'll start sweating. If it's too cold, you're nipping out.
This is why it's good that I'm doing it at Revolution Hall. Yeah. I've performed there so many times that I know, and I've been lucky enough to sell it out every time I've done it. I know what that room is like when it's completely full.
Yeah.
They always nail the temperature. My nipples are always on point. And if I am nipping out,
good.
I know I have like little covers I can put over.
Okay.
The makeup kit has, I have makeup, I have pasties, I have artificial nipples if I want to nip out and I can't get it up. I've got everything. I'm prepared for every contingent.
Being in Portland, do you have to be conscious of your shoe game when you are doing a special?
Because that is something, the outfit is something that I'm still
working through?
Still working through.
Okay. Because outfit is a big one, because like if you watch Raw or Delirious, Eddie Murphy is in a leather suit.
And it breaks my heart that he did that already, because I want to wear a leather suit, but it's like somebody's gone and done it already.
But you can also pinpoint the exact like month and year that those were filmed based on the type of leather suit he is wearing. So do you want it to be something where it's like, oh, he definitely made that in 2020s.
You could tell the exact moment he wore it by carbon dating the cocaine in the leather of his jumpsuit. The shoe game is something I keep in mind, but I'm turning 40 in October. You know what I mean? So it's like, I've got a garage full of sneakers that I feel like I can't wear anymore. Because that are a little too flashy for like a 40-year-old white dude who looks like the dad from Bob's Burgers. Like, I have a limited range of what I can get away with, so...
You're speaking to a man wearing Crocs right now.
Right, well, okay, but those are like, Crocs are like fashionable now.
Yeah, tell my wife that.
All right, I will. Get her on the horn. We'll call her up. We'll have a Croc fashion intervention. So I'm trying to find the right pair of New Balance. I'm trying to find the right pair of
the right pair of 550s.
Yeah, 550s that are flashy enough, but don't make me look like
we're not going monotone. We're going like earth tones.
We're doing some earth tones, some jewel tones, like a little pop of color, and then like pants that flatter, and then like a shirt that doesn't pull too much attention away from my beautiful face.
See, those are the things that I just wonder about, because comedians, you guys, like comedy is what you do.
Yeah.
But when you go through like a big special, it's so much more because everybody's watching.
Well, you even have to worry about like your outfit compared to what
the background is,
right? Like, so the curtain behind you, if you're wearing a color that looks bad with that, or even worse, blends in with it, then all of a sudden that's something you have to consider. So I'm on like right now with the label, with the producers, like...
That's what I was wondering. So you have somebody else producing. You're not producing it.
Yeah. This company called 800 Pound Gorilla, who, like, they do, like, Kyle Kinane specials. Yeah. They do a lot of, like, great stand-up comedy specials. So I'm working with them. But you're on calls, like, okay, so they have three curtain options, so we need to know your outfit, and I don't know my outfit yet. So I'm here in Portland, sales tax-free, trying to figure out what that is.
That's right.
Yeah, right now.
You're getting into the employee store. You're going to the Columbia employee store. You're just going to all of them and just getting the lay of the land
in there,
right now.
Trying to say like, hey, if you sponsor my outfit, upwards of 60 people will see me wearing this. You know what I mean? Please, like, get behind me. We can work on a sponsorship opportunity.
I love it. Well, that is March 23rd, where you have two shows now.
That's right. Yeah,
and that is the special that is a decade. It's been a decade since you put out an album.
A decade. I put out this one called 9.2 on Pitchfork that I did at Mississippi Studios like a decade ago. So this is my first one since then. Yeah, I've been in the lab writing late night for too long. I'm ready to get out there and do my own thing.
Crazy. Now you're, and then you also have a book coming out.
I do.
And I want to talk to you about that. And Ian Carmel is going to stick in studio with us for a little bit longer. Actually, we're going to hold him hostage, and he has no choice.
Yeah, we barred the door.
No, the door. I see that right now. There's armed guards outside. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. He's going to stick around, hang out with us, because he's our own. He's our own. He's one of us.
Yeah.
And we do need to talk some Blazers with
you. We do need to talk some. Yes. I was at the game last night and at the Charlotte one, so I'm ready.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ian Carmel in studio. This is Danny and Dusty on The Fan.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.